remember that we had another issue with an Airbus. I thought it was probably another airplane pilot interface problem.
When you say pilot interface, what is that?
Well, pilots not understanding the plane well enough. Airbus is a fully digital airplane, and there's no connection between the pilots and the flight controls other than electronically. It's called a fly-by-wire system. And the pilots put an input into the computers, and then the computer decides whether it's appropriate or not for the airplane to make that maneuver. If the plane decides it's not, sometimes it won't let the pilots do what they think they should do. And there's been some problems with that over the years, and a few of these have gone down because of it. I don't mean to say that this is a bad airplane. It's just a different type of airplane, and the training different for people.
And there's quite a few Airbuses out there, aren't there? I believe this was an Airbus A320.
Yeah, that's a very common airplane, and it's a very smooth, comfortable, nice airplane to fly, but it's different than most of the pilots are trained on, and they're very complicated.
You know, I've been hearing that because I've been watching these reports so closely, being fascinated by all this and how quickly the information has been made transparent, which in our country is quite the opposite. You know, things happen and we news conferences come up and we're kind of put off. And to learn about how these planes operate and how much flying time the pilots have, and apparently this particular co-pilot had, which was not a lot of hours, especially looking at the fact that in our country, these pilots, I guess, need at least 1,500 hours flying time, and he had 600-plus hours, I think.
Oh, that's not good.
Right. And so now they were talking last night, and I found this really interesting, too, how there's more uniformity across the physical part of flying, you know, the planes and the manufacturers, but not so much when it comes to training and learning about these Airbuses. And like you said, it's almost as if they're smarter than the pilot. So the pilot can only do so much. I wonder what your thoughts are about this particular pilot who programmed the plane in such a way that perhaps the plane wouldn't fight him in this gradual descent over approximately 8 minutes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the 600-hour factor is just bone-chilling to me. I mean, that's not any time at all. And you know, he was certified and he was checked and he was good, but that standard is pretty low. That being said, he had enough knowledge to fly the airplane into the ground. That's not a real difficult thing to do. It looked like he programmed about a 4,000-foot-a-minute descent into the autopilot and just let it run. That's one thing those airplanes won't do, is they won't pull up from a descent like that. It'll warn you. There's all kinds of warnings and alarms and all kinds of stuff going off as you come closer to the ground. There's a terrain awareness system that comes alive. But it won't take control for you and level out. As far as the airplane knows, it's landing. It doesn't care. Once he programmed that descent, he could pretty much walk away from the cockpit and let the plane fly into the ground.
And then they've been able to share some of the information from the recorder in the cockpit, and they're saying that they can hear the pilot trying to get in and being more aggressive as time went on trying to get in. You can hear screams from the cabin as the passengers became aware of what was going on. With the plane in a descent like that, Steve, if the pilot, in your opinion, would able to have gotten back into the cockpit, would there have been anything he could have done at that point?
Oh, sure. He could take control of the airplane, and as long as the co-pilot didn't fight him.
Which is what they said happened in the Egyptian 990 flight, that the pilot, because that was pre-9/11, there wasn't the reinforced door. He was able to get in, but the co-pilot was fighting him. The co-pilot was the one that had put that plane into a very steep descent in the Egyptian flight.
Yeah, in this case, it wasn't really a steep descent. It was just a gradual descent, not out of our normal parameters, but it was a little steep. But yeah, I think if the pilot could have gotten in there and gotten control of the airplane, it would have been easily solved.
I wanted to ask you, too, about your thoughts. You know, things have been coming out about Lufthansa being very adamant about this pilot, this co-pilot, having gone through the flight school, passed everything very strongly. He was ready to go. And then we start finding out about the psychological aspect, that there is an ongoing, at least with Lufthansa and Germanwings, which was a budget subsidiary of Lufthansa, but still, of course, owned by Lufthansa. They don't have ongoing psychological tests, if you will. And even, I believe, in our country, maybe you can speak to this, there aren't ongoing psychological tests. It's more self-monitoring. Is that what you know to be true?
Yes. Yeah. I've been flying commercially for 35 years, and maybe I'm letting the cat out of the bag here, but I don't think I've been psychologically tested. Maybe I should be. I don't know. But I don't believe we have psychological testing. Our focus has always been on medical issues. Pass the interviews, if you pass the training, if your crewmates think you're good and qualified and stable, then that's pretty much been the standard to now. You know, I don't know of any psychological testing that the airlines do, but I mean, I don't fly with airlines, so I don't really know. I don't believe there's such a thing. I think this is more relevant is now what Lufthansa and the European Union needs to do, what we do in the U.S., is never allow one person in a cockpit. At the very least, there's always a flight attendant or somebody up there with the remaining pilot at all times.
And that's in our country, and that's what we're finding out, that is not a standard across the European airlines.
No.
However, many airlines are now coming out, even without regulation in place, and saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to adopt this practice. There's going to have to be at least two people in the cockpit. And what they're explaining is it's not putting a lot of pressure on the flight attendant if that's the third person or they decide to start flying three pilots again, but it's more or less so that the flight attendant can be another set of eyes to see who's trying to come into the cockpit, right, and make sure they can allow that person in so what has happened in the past can't happen again.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly right. I don't think we'll ever see three pilots in the airplane anymore because, you know, these airplanes are designed for two. And there's no reason to have a third guy sitting in the back and just in case somebody wants to go to the bathroom. But, you know, a flight attendant up there, maybe they give a minimal training. I don't know. Pretty much don't have to have any training other than another set of eyes, you know, another set of, as you say, something to watch them, you know, who's coming through the door or, you know, could talk on the radio while the captain's doing things. Or, you know, it works in our country quite well, I think. I'm shocked that Lufthansa has let this happen with just one pilot up there. I mean, that's a world-renowned, state-of-the-art airline and really good. You know, I would not hesitate to fly on that airline anywhere.
It's so interesting. After 9/11, everyone worked so hard and quickly to protect the cockpit, not thinking that the cabin had to be protected from the cockpit. And that's what we've seen happen now with these doors that are bulletproof and grenade-proof, and you just can't get into them. So now they're going to have to look. And I've been hearing various reports saying you have to be careful what safety precautions you put in place because they can boomerang on you to a degree.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it certainly did.
As a pilot, would you like to see more uniformed flying standards, not just with the mechanical, physical part of the plane, but with the pilots across the globe?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I definitely would. And, I think that the 1,500-hour requirement for our air carriers now coming on board for new pilots is a very good thing. And there's no substitute for experience. And, you know, and yeah, we're going to have to pay pilots more, and yeah, we're going to have more experienced pilots up there. But I really think better paid, more experienced pilots up there will do a lot for our safety problems.
And what about the psychological aspect? I mean, one guy was saying that I heard on a news report who was an experienced pilot said that pilots are really good at compartmentalizing. And so if they want to compartmentalize some kind of emotional issue they're having, a family issue, relationship issue, financial issue, they can kind of tune that out and then just focus on the flying and being a good pilot. How do you get past that? I mean, do you have any answers for that, Steve, how that we can make sure that we have pilots that are truly emotionally stable to fly these planes?
Well, I don't even know if we want to get past that. You pretty much want a pilot that can get in the airplane and forget about his divorce or forget about the dog dying that happened yesterday or forget about his bankruptcy going. You don't want that guy thinking about that stuff up there. If you want us being able to put that aside and fly the airplane and doing it professionally and to the best of your ability every time. You know, the Air Force used to have a human reliability program where they would say you can't be in charge of launching missiles unless you pass those psychological tests. Some of those guys get pulled out of bombers and fighters and things when they did have a divorce or when they did have issues like that. And again, I'm speaking out of my realm here because I'm don't know much about psychology, but I don't know that we could do psychological screening for pilots. That's a big order. It's a tough one.
I don't think a lot of people do, and that's why the conversation and dialogue, I think, has begun especially strongly now. And preliminary reports are saying that this co-pilot that was on this German Wings air flight that crashed the plane into the mountainside apparently was being grounded on a medical condition, and that it's not being said if it's physical or if it's emotional, and that information was not made known to German Wings or Lufthansa. Those are preliminary reports, so we'll have to. And I guess that information is coming from when they went to his apartment and start taking out boxes of information and his computer.
Right.
But again, that's all very, very early. Something else I wanted to get your opinion on too, Steve, is they're talking about video cameras in the cockpit. Now, looking at this in retrospect, we can probably assume at this point that a video camera wouldn't have done any good if he's locked in to the cockpit, but it would give, I guess, investigators another tool to look at as to what took place. What are your thoughts on videos in the cockpit?
I'm not a fan of it. I think it's one more machine in the plane that we don't need, especially with an Airbus. And, you know, I kind of spoke poorly of Airbuses earlier, but I know for one thing that the Airbuses are very highly automated or highly digitally recorded. They have flight data recorders. They have cockpit voice recorders. In other words, if you throw a switch in a recent generation Airbus, you know, it's recorded on a tape somewhere, on a chip or something. You know, if you move a flight control, it knows you've moved a flight control. And, you know, historically, with that type of technology and with the cockpit voice recorder, you can piece these accidents right back together really well. I don't think a video recording would offer much more. I mean, you're going to see the back of a guy's head. You may see him flip a switch, but you could verify that switch position other ways.
Through the data recording that they're still looking for.
Yeah. Even some of the little planes now, the Cirrus, little single-engine Cirrus planes, have recording capability that's just amazing. You know, they can pull a chip out of the avionics panel and reconstruct what was going on in the speeds and the controls and various things for these little planes. And the technology is there to rebuild these accidents and to understand them.
I understand. And talking about the Airbus again, the Airbus A320, and the fact that it's so computerized, if you will, do you think, Steve, that pilots are getting enough training in actually flying aircraft?
Oh, no.
So if they need to take over, they're not really trained to fly the aircraft.
Maybe that's a flippant answer, but in most cases, yes, the pilots are very well trained. But when you get into the smaller planes, the commuters, some of these pilots have got very little time. You know, the Asiana flight into San Francisco, they landed short. There's three qualified captains on that airplane, and they just did not have enough experience landing without an instrument direction. They didn't have enough experience for practice, and these are all qualified, and, you know, they've flown this plane internationally everywhere, but they just couldn't do a visual landing. I don't mean to be flippant about that answer, but I don't think there's such a thing as too much training, and I think that we can address a lot of these Airbus issues with some of that training.
Right. I think with all the reports that have been coming out, I've been most surprised about how much these planes fly themselves and how little some of these pilots are actually doing. And some pilots had said in some of the interviews that some of the things you battle the most are boredom when you're flying these long flights because the plane is pretty much doing everything it needs to do. I find that really interesting. I'm kind of getting to the point now when I walk into a plane, I want to interview the pilots. How much training have you had? How many people are going to be in the cockpit?
You and me both.
Yeah. When did you have your last drink?
Are you old enough to serve drinks in this airplane?
Yeah.
Oh, you're only 18. I'm sorry. I'm going to take another plane.
Oh my gosh. Exactly.
The boredom issue is certainly a factor. I mean, I had a good friend who was a captain on a United plane, San Francisco to Sydney, and they were in this plane for 14 hours or better. They had two different sets of crews, so they'd go back and take naps, and they were safe and they were good. But you take off the airplane, and you turn the autopilot on, and you get to the other end, and you turn the autopilot off, and you land.
This tragedy has touched people in so many ways, and it's so horrific, and especially to think what the passengers were experiencing as they could see and hear the pilot so drastically trying to get back into that cockpit, and then, of course, seeing the mountains getting closer and closer as they continue to descend. And I read a report just this morning, I think it was from The Guardian, talking about this one pilot on German wings. It was the very next morning, I believe, who actually went into the cabin and spoke to the passengers and said, "This is how we feel about this, and we are going to make sure that you get to your destination safely, and we're going to have two people in the cockpit at all times, and we have families, and we care about our families, and we want to see them again, and we want to get you to your families." It was really sweet, and it was such a strong sign of compassion and empathy.
That's a heartbreak.
So if you know, in light of this horrific event, the dialogue is continuing and new conversations are taking place about what we can do to make it even more safe for the pilots and the passengers.
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, I think the first thing to do is to ensure that any airline has a two-person minimum in the front seats. That's a huge step. This still won't preclude the guy that's completely crazy and overpower somebody else in the front or any of that stuff, but it certainly is a whole lot better than locking the door and leaving the guy in the back and doing what you want.
Absolutely, and that you bring up a very good point, Steve, and that is there's not 100% infallibility pretty much in anything.
No.
So all we can do, you know, is try to make it more safe for everybody to fly and have that input. And I appreciate your input on this, Steve. I mean, it's great to hear from a local pilot and somebody who really cares, and I appreciate your comments.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. And I should say, you know, as you know, I mean, this is an incredibly safe way to travel. And if you look at all the airplanes, in some of these websites, I'll show you all the airplanes in the air on a kind of a snapshot basis. And tens of thousands of airplanes are flying every day, all day long, everywhere. And we get one or two or three horrific crashes, and we focus on this thing, and it's really bad, and it's horrible. But that shouldn't preclude people from getting on an airline. You travel in a car, and you take your life in your hands anytime you go down the highway. The stat rate for accidents and fatalities on the highway, you know, per 100,000 is way over an airline issue. Now we have CNN, and we have all these news medias, and we have cockpit voice recorders, and we can hear the voices and hear these guys, and it's very dramatic, and it's pretty horrible. But that being said, there's no reason anybody would say, I'm not flying on an Airbus, or I'm not flying in a 767, or I'm not flying in a Cessna, or whatever it is. You know, it's a very safe way to travel.
That website you were talking about is flightradar24.com.
Oh, yeah.
And I just found out about that, and it's really something to see. And I posted it in Dale's Community Cafe so folks can see it, and it's quite remarkable.
It's amazing. And all those planes take off and land, and they have no events, and they have no issues, and sometimes they're delayed, and sometimes they have mechanical issues on the ground. But, you know, it's a pretty good system. And our air traffic control system supports it and does so well, too. So I guess I should say, you know, it's not something to be afraid of.
I'm glad you bring that up, because my first response every time I hear about one of these tragedies is I'm done. I'm not going to fly anymore. I don't really enjoy flying that much anyway. And this is from someone who started to take flying lessons when I was in college. But the first mishap, I tried to grab the instructor's knee instead of helping the plane. So I knew I wasn't cut out as a pilot, but I was really interested in it for a while. And I don't even like roller coasters. So, you know, when I get into a plane, it's not an easy event for me. You know, it's not a calming event. And so when these kinds of things happen, I say I'm not going to fly again. So it's always so great to be reminded that it is very safe. And so many planes take off and land safely every single hour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you really can't exist in this world anymore without flying something somewhere. You have to go.